C1SP. Number 9A.
Well, subject which usually is always a very important one because gives us the basis of the whole chapter. And here we must remember what this subject wants to give us as a basis, namely that only that which can be deduced from the divine mind, namely ideas of the divine mind, that only these ideas are real identities, and being real identities, they are always eternal. And as they are ideas of the divine mind, they are always infinite and never finite. So really, we can at once detect if something is a real identity of being or not, by just asking, is it finite or is it infinite? If it is finite, limited, temporal, material, then we know that it isn't an identity of being, no matter how beautiful it is. But everything which is of the nature of infinity, of limitlessness, of spiritual, timeless, spaceless, that are identities of being. And as such, they must be recognized. Now, on the other side, we have seen that all that which originates from our human mind, that which the personal mind thinks out, that which is evolved from the human mind, from human belief, that is are never real identities of being. Now, we come to the second subject. If we have now seen in the first one what are the real identities of being, namely the ideas of mind, and what are unreal so-called identities, namely the evolved pictures and manifestations of mortal mind, well, have we then two universes? Have we then two concepts of the universe? Is there then a universe of the divine mind, which is eternal, and is there a universe of mortal mind which is temporal? So the second subject comes in and says, well, that's the difference between Christian Science and Spiritualism. Spiritualism says, yes, there are two, and they commune with each other, they mingle with each other, they use each other. They use each other as channels and as mediums. They commune, they blend, and all that. They say, yes, there are two universes, the physical universe and the spiritual universe, and they commune. Whereas Christian Science comes to the standpoint and says, well, I also have to give an explication. Is it true that there is a universe of the divine mind and a universe of mortal mind? Are there two which are separated? Or is there only one? And all the succeeding subjects of this first part have as their object, as their purpose, to resolve this apparent duality and resolve it in consciousness until at the end of the first chapter, one begins to see that there is only one real universe, and that the other universe, the universe of mortal mind, is not real. In order to solve that in this second subject, Mrs. Eddy makes it first clear that these two universes never mingle with each other. And so we come to where we can see, which I may have epitomized like this, that the spiritual sense of life, that the spiritual identities of being, that the spiritual sense of life cannot mingle with or commune through the material sense of life, nor vice versa, because they are opposite. The big tone here in this second subject is now that these two universes are first of all opposites, and being opposites, they can never mingle. Spiritualism says, no, they are not two opposites, and therefore they can mingle. The thought is very near at this moment, which says, well, if that which mortal mind and the human thought evolves is not reality, how then do we have a possibility or a medium to reach reality? How then is it possible, if these two universes are opposites, how is it then possible to commune with the true universe? And so, while spiritualism says you can reach the spiritual through the material, you can reach the immortal through the mortal, you see the mingling, you can reach the principle of being through people, through communication of people and spirits. So, on the other hand, Christian Science comes and says, yes, there is communication with God. There is a true sense of communication, but that communication is always within the own realm and rhythm of spirit. Namely, there is effectually a communion between God and man, between God and humanity, and there is effectually a communion between man and God, but that communion is always through the medium of, and then she gives quite a few indication of what this medium is. She says a medium is through immortal sense. See, there is a medium to commune with God, it's but through immortal sense. She says there is a medium through which God communes with mortal, namely through soul, the only truth giver. You see, through soul with a capital S, the only truth giver, the only true testimony. She says, yes, there is a communication from God to man. It's always a communication of good, of individual good. She says, yes, there is a communication from God to man and from man to God, but that is through divine law. Through divine law. You know, whatever we study and ponder and digest in the line of a true statement of God is communing with that God. It's the use of the best spiritual faculties. And that is true mediumship and true communion. So, in Christian Science, we don't say there is no communion with God, but that communion with God is always through the same nature as God is. We saw that in prayer. We saw that in Atonement and Eucharist. We saw that in marriage. That the approach to God was always through the own nature of God, with the help of the own nature of God, by using the own nature of God, never through something outside. one begins to touch really the sanctity of the signs of spirit, the clearness and purity and holiness of the signs of spirit, which never deviates from the statement that God is spirit and therefore all and only. She says, yes, there is communion between God and man, and man is God, but that is always through the divine order. She says, whereas spiritualism would interfere with the divine order. You see, here I think she gives a very good illustration of what divine order means. You see, divine order here, through the whole second subject, is showing that that is order when we start from a premise, from a, say, a premises, and you stick to the premises and never leave it. That's divine order. It's showing that spirit does communicate itself. As what? Only as itself. Through what? Only through its own nature. Never through another nature. It communicates itself as itself, through itself, to what? Never to anything outside of itself, but always to itself. Keeping that line, you see, that's divine order. When we look up what Mrs. Eddy is called divine order, it's always indicating that purity of logical sequence, you see, of a logical sequence in divine reasoning. It's the, and we will see how this saves really us in the second part tomorrow. How if only that brings the true Savior with us, that only when we start with God and reason from God as God and through the nature of God, which is logic, scientific deduction, scientific reasoning, and so on, and always deduce and reason from God through the nature of God to the nature of God. We always go to the true man, to the true universe. Then we stay in the order of spirit. And that's what she wants to show here. That's the true sense of communion between God and man to God, the divine order, where the communion is always through the nature of God itself. That the nature of God of itself may be through the divine mind, that is, through divine recognition or through the divine apprehension of things, through the divine intellect, or it may be through spiritual sense, or not through material sense, it may be through divine law, she calls it even, through the divine law it communicates itself, through divine system, that's another medium. See, these are our true mediums. All that which are elements, means, that's the medium, the divine means with which we touch God. That's our true mediumship. And against that stands really spiritualism, which tries from another standpoint to construct a communion between God and men. It uses other means than spiritual means. It uses the testimony of the physical senses. For instance, every spirit communication builds not on the divine hearing and the divine seeing, not on the spiritual senses, but always manifests itself as sound, or as sight, or as the other taste, and so on. See, always through the physical senses. Spiritualism always manifests itself instead through the divine logic, always through the counterfeit of it, always through person. It's always a person that communicates the message. And it's always a medium that receives, the medium as a person that receives the message and voices it. It's usually two persons in between. See, quite something different than our true communion with principle, where principle speaks through spiritual sense to us. See the holiness of it. But even in ordinary life, quite apart from spiritualistic seances, we have these phenomena of spiritualism in which we believe. Just as I said the hour ago, that's what some authority, some personal authority tells us that we believe. That's what a testimony of the physical senses tells us. That's what we have seen with our own eyes. That's what we have heard with our own ears. That we begin to believe. And so take the physical senses as a medium. And we drop down into blunt spiritualism, just as blunt as those who go to a spiritualistic seance. That's the second. I want to take this subject very short because I want to go through all of them tonight, so that tomorrow we have time for the second part. Now, having shown in the first big subject that only that are real identities of being which are deduced from the divine mind, that which mortal mind and mortal thought and human belief evolves is not the reality of being, then, having shown in the second subject that we don't think that we can reach the divine mind through the use of the human mind, that we don't mean that in order to be on communicable terms with the divine mind we need to mobilize human beliefs, but that in order to be on communicable terms with spirit, we have to mobilize the nature of spirit, the qualities of spirit, that which is innate in spirit. So we come at once to the third subject, which says, all right, and if you take that right step of communication with the one spirit, well, stay there. Don't fall into the spiritualistic belief that you can fall back from the spiritual into the material, that there is a retrogressive step from the spiritual into the material. And so we come to the third subject, where she shows that a spiritual sense of existence can never be transformed back to a material sense of existence. That a spiritual sense of existence, that to be on communicable terms with spirit, with the true identities of being, that being once understood, we can never fall back, and that cannot be made to be transformed into its opposite, into a material sense of being. See, that's one of the most important points where we have to be careful, that once spiritual sense has told us the truth about being or about the situation, that then we stick to it. That then we stay there, that then we see that the spiritual never can retrograde, that the spiritual can never be transformed into the material. Now, spiritualism would like to do that. The spiritualism is a belief. And that belief tells us and professes that after having died, after having left the body, and therefore having been transformed into a spirit, which would be a progressive step, so to say, spiritualism says, but then there is the possibility of returning the whole process of development, then the spirit can come back to those living here, that the spirit can, after having left the material form, take on again material investitures, can take on again the English language, can and speak through a voice in English, can take on again point of views, central point of views, or good point of views, and pronounce good and evil, can turn back. That such a spirit, after having progressed into the spiritual, can fall back again into a material investiture, and so you can see the belief is always that there is, instead of a forward development, that there is a falling back. That's the old, thousand-year-old claim, that once there was a paradise and Eden where everything was nice and jolly and nice, and then that man has fallen. Well, that's the spiritualistic belief. You see, that she says that very clearly at the end. She says spiritualism would transfer man from the spiritual sense of existence back into a material sense. See, that's spiritualism. It's false transformation. Soul is the true transformer. But soul is that transformer which only transforms in the line of spirit, always forward, always into the line of spiritualization. Whereas spiritualism professes in that soul is a transformer which is backward, namely to transform spirit back into matter, to fall back. Well, this claim is a claim that has existed long before the spiritualistic circles came into vogue. Do I say vogue or vogue? Or vogue. That is a claim that existed as long, so to say, as mortal man existed. It's the claim of retrogression. It's the claim that we can go forward for a while, and then things can, in a mystical way, and one doesn't know, there can be something happening, there can be an accident, there can be an incident, there can be bad luck and so on, which turns the whole thing backward. There is another claim of spiritualism which says that I prosper and that I become stronger and stronger for 30 or 40 years, and then comes a crucial point, and then my strength begins to yield, my health begins to yield. It's all the going backward. It's spiritualistic. See, everything that shows that falling away from the perfect standard and going back or falling down to an imperfect standard, that's the claim of spiritualism. It is materializing spirit again. First, spiritualism wants to spiritualize matter. That's the claim of the second subject. And then afterwards, it wants to materialize again spirit, which is the claim of the third subject. Now, we see how deeply these beliefs have an effect on our everyday life. In everyday life, we encounter a very that belief lingering, so to say, unconsciously, practically every mentality which says, yes, things are going jolly well. I think they are only going too well. I don't trust them really. You see, that's spiritualism. Just doesn't trust that something can go well without afterwards falling back. Things just go too well to trust it, you hear, or some other expression like that. Or we believe that with 50 years or 60 years there is a turn and we begin to lose what we have gained. We begin to lose our memory, we begin to lose our strength, we begin to lose our substance, we begin to lose this and begin to lose that and fall back to dust from where we are. That's the belief. That's spiritualistic belief in return, in falling away from the true standard of life. So, if we want to take a stand against that worldwide spiritualistic belief, we have to take the standpoint of soul. In that standpoint of soul, we have only one change, and that's a change of progress. That's a change of progress. I remembered I read 2 days ago something in the second edition of Mrs. Eddy, where she says, but I can't remember it now exactly, but she says something in that way that she says that soul changes not, you see, but the science of soul always changes in the line of progress. That's not exactly her words, but her meaning. See, and she brings it in there in connection with this third subject. See, so often we must realize that there is always a change going on. We want to change. There is a transformation going on. That was the big subject, the third subject in prayer, the prayer of transformation through sincerity. So there must be a change going on, but that change is always in the line of spirit, spiritualization. But in that line of spiritualization, we always stick to the perfect standard and never admit that this perfect standard could be lost. And that it is, never admit that there exists such a thing as a divine law or something like that which can make us lose that standard, or that there is some power which is able to bend that spiritualization backward into materialization. So this subject again is very important. She says that this sense that spiritualism would transfer men from the spiritual sense of existence back into a material sense of existence, she calls this gross materialism. This gross materialism is scientifically impossible, since to infinite spirit there can be no matter. See, if we would see and clearly the onlyness and allness of spirit, we would never think that there is something to go back to. How can spirit, who is the only, go back to something which is unlike spirit? It's unreasonable. The whole chapter here is just an appeal to reason, to logic. It is the chapter on the word as science, where science has to explain, has to reason everything out which has gone before. And whereas before we had that wonderful tone, always in the third one, first the willingness to transform ourselves And in that transformation, atonement and Eucharist, the willingness to resist everything which is against this transformation. And then in marriage, the third subject was that through that spiritualization, we become more selfless. Through that transformation, we get away from the ego and self. Here now she comes and says, well, what is the explication of it? The explication of it is that from eternity to eternity, man was always what he was and could never fall away from that standard, could never have been transformed to a state which is lower than perfection. So here we find all these arguments which come up in the human mind, the spiritualistic arguments which go against that divine law, that those arguments which say that once we have reached in understanding a certain point, that we could lose that understanding. You see, so often we feel or we hear from other students that they say, well, I had once a time when I understood this and that so clearly, and now I have lost it. Well, that's spiritualism. That's spiritualism. That's not science. If we have really once understood a point in science, we can never lose it again. If we feel we have once won a point in science and have lost it again, then we can be sure that we have never won that point, but we have only have a belief in that point in science. But once we understand a point in science, then we are that point. Then we are that point. Then we are that divine idea. And that divine idea never falls back. See, that's the truth. And I think it's a good thing to handle spiritualism over and over. Because spiritualism always would rob us of the point we have won. Spiritualism always would come in at the very, very unwatchful moment and take us away what we have won in science. Because that's the claim of spiritualism. Or she says that in science renders any backward transformation impossible, just as manhood cannot go back to infancy, just as light cannot go back to darkness and so on, can be transformed backward. In the same way, really, our true status of being can never be transformed backward. If we feel the experience of having lost an understanding, if we feel the experience of going backward, let's see that this happens only in belief. Only in belief. It never happens in reality. And alone to see that this backward transformation or the loss or the falling away and so on is just the belief of falling away will help us already very much to overcome this belief. That's why I always say, here she shows how to get rid of the belief in a belief. What is shown here is not only that spiritualism is a belief. That's all right. That's quite true. That spiritualism is a belief. But as long as we believe that belief, we put ourselves within the realm of that belief, and we are subject to that belief, and we experience the effects of that belief. Let's be quite clear. You see, these are the two realms. The moment I subject myself to the belief of spiritualism, knowingly, or what happens mostly, unknowingly, unconsciously, if I subject myself to that belief, I'm in that belief, I'm part of that belief, and I experience that belief. But that's the mortal mind picture. But what she wants to show here is that in the realm of mortal mind, there can go on many, many things, good and evil, evil and good, but they can go on, but they never touch the real signs of spirit. They never touch the real status of man. Now, where is our safety? Our safety is to disbelieve the belief of spiritualism. If we disbelieve consciously, knowingly, this, in a way of analyzing it and uncovering it and destroying it, if we do that, then we free ourselves of the belief of spiritualism and of the effects of the belief of spiritualism, and we have our being within the realm of the signs of being, signs of spirit. See what a beautiful job we have to do. See, sometimes we say, well, what a big job lies before us. Yes, it's a big job, but a beautiful job, a wonderful job. And what I always like is that nothing can stand in the way to do that job. Nothing at all. Nothing at all can stand between me and God to conform to the signs of spirit. Nothing. That's the bigness and the beauty of it. Whereas the poor spiritist, he always needs a medium, and a good medium, so-called good medium, and he always needs a spirit, and he hopes to fall on a good spirit and not on a bad spirit who has a bad temper and lets loose. See? Well, that's true. Every medium tells you, well, if you're lucky, you get in contact with a good spirit. If you're not lucky, well, you get one with a bad temper. That's the same when you take a job. You come to some spirits as your bosses who have a good temper and some have a bad temper. It's the same stuff. The same stuff. And we have to handle it in the same way. There is no other way to handle both situations. Just one principle to handle it. It says here that in Christian Science there is never a retrograde step. Never a retrograde in Christian Science. In the belief of Christian Science there is only retrograde step. Because belief is always retrograding. So if we believe in Christian Science, we certainly will have retrogression. But in Christian Science, she said, there is never, you see, never a retrograde step. And so on. Well, that's just the whole tone of this subject. Then, as you know, I told you that I haven't found a subject which would have the overall tone, a big overall tone of principle. And so I just want to leave that proposition, why and why not, and just stick to the text and what she has given us. Because little by little I think it becomes clear why, what the reason is. So we come to life, to the fifth subject, which I call fifth subject, life. And here she begins to change the trend of the presentation. She begins now to show the Savior, life, truth, and love, the Savior for spiritualism. In Mind, Spirit, Soul, she showed the propositions of spiritualism and the propositions of Christian Science. And now she goes on and shows that these two propositions cannot be reconciled, but that they are resolved, so to say, into one big truth, wherein the proposition of Christian Science is seen to have a fulfillment, whereas the propositions of spiritualism are seen to be a contradiction in themselves and therefore just a nothingness. Here in life, she shows how that to spiritually to understand that the identities of being can never die, that resurrects from the dream of death. See, there is no spiritualism without death. Spiritists can only communicate with spirits who have passed through the phase called death. Here on this plane of life, we cannot have a phase of spiritualism without death, namely without the belief of putting life into matter. If we wouldn't do that, if we didn't believe in that, then there would be no reason for spiritualism. If we would see that life is in and of spirit, then we would stay in the rhythm of life. Can you see that? So here, after having shown that the identities, the real identities of being are ideas and not things, material things, that these real identities of being never mingle with anything which is material, and third, that these real identities of being never lose their standard, never lose their identity, that they always stay what they are, then she can come and say, therefore, these true identities of being are always resurrected above the mortal. They are always resurrected above mortal mind, above matter, and above senses. And so, really lifts us into the true life, you see. Therefore, the example which she gives here of Jesus raising Lazarus, she takes it and shows that Jesus didn't resurrect life out of matter, but that Jesus resurrected Lazarus on the ground that he understood that life was never in matter, never was born into matter, never lived into matter, and therefore never had to be resurrected out of matter. See again a sublime, clear, holy standpoint which she takes and says, well, we never succeed in resurrecting ourselves over what we call death and the grave as long as we believe that there is life in this body. As long as we believe that life is in this body, we can never resurrect that life out of body. If we want to do that, we need spiritualism. We need spiritualism. We need spiritualism which says, I can free that life which is in the body by letting the body disintegrate. And then what is left is a spirit. So spiritualism is a very logical consequence of the belief that life was ever in matter, in body. And I think we all agree that consciously, but mostly unconsciously, we believe that life is in body. And that we fight like hell to keep life in body. But that is the basis of spiritualism. If we do that, and if we want on the other side reach immortality, then we must go to the spiritualist and say, all right, the only method to reach immortality is by letting that old body disintegrate. Then at that moment, the spirit, my life, is freed. See? So, Christian Science takes the other standpoint. Life goes always back to the principle of the whole being. The principle of the whole being, which is mind, spirit, soul. The first three subjects. And in those first three subjects, we saw that the divine mind expresses itself in ideas, not in a body. That the divine spirit never mingles with matter or the body. Therefore was never in the body. And in soul we saw that the divine spirit never loses its identity, never becomes corporeal, and therefore that our true identity was never the body. Therefore, where is our life? Our life is in mind and in spirit and in soul. There is our life. And that life is the true life. That life was never born into matter, never lived into matter, was never sick in matter, never died in matter, and never needs to be resurrected out of matter.